No, but we're going to have to start feeding habits tomorrow.
It's 1 o'clock and we call our meeting back to order. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you being here. We're going to start a little discussion here with our representatives. So if anybody wants to start, we can start at that end of the table.
You know, you did that to me the other night.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
I can't remember.
Okay. I'm not sure, gentlemen, if this question that I have pertains to you guys, but you can tell me. There has been funding put forth to put all the... through YDOT to put the wildlife fence from here to Daniel, the overpasses and everything. Has there been any consideration to do that towards Big Piney and LaBarge?
So yes. It's still, so they had a summit, I guess if you guys don't mind. So they had a summit with YDOT and Game and Fish a year ago. And it, through that process, they identified kind of the areas that needed worked on across the whole state. And one of those, obviously, was that area. Mm-hmm. And so now the discussion is how do we fund it? And that's kind of where I'm coming in and trying to figure out how we might get that done. But I know there's some private money from some foundations in Jackson that want to help support this stuff, but... I've been trying to figure that out, how to get it funded. But they're developing the proposals, but the proposals aren't to hard concrete numbers yet, which is kind of what I need.
Well, I guess my thoughts are, if you need help, and I'm not sure what, it can't be financial because I'm on a fixed income. But anything.
But he does have the day off.
But I got the day off. Absolutely. So I can go to a meeting.
Yeah.
If there's anything I can do to help, okay. I would, because it's amazing with the truck traffic that's in Big Piney right now with some things happening in the oil field. They're killing deer day and day after day. Where when you think about this migration thing that's coming, everybody's talking about the migration and wildlife friendly fences and all that. We're killing so many deer down there that are coming from the Hoback or Jackson or wherever. They're just not going to the anticline. They're coming down this side and going to Big Piney, and then we're losing them as soon as they get there. So
that's one of the top five areas in the state to this.
Yeah. Okay.
And so they're trying to build a plan. And I will get you in touch, particularly if you could send me an email. I will get you in touch with the people that are working on that.
Okay.
And when they get some numbers, I told them if we could get some numbers this session, you know, there's, you know, if I get an opportunity, I can get into something, mm-hmm. but they just haven't gotten any numbers.
All right. Well, I can, I have the time.
Okay.
Albert, are you saying they've already, has the commission already kind of jumped on this, or?
So YDOT, Hilda, and Game and Fish hosted a kind of a symposium here in Pinedale summer before this.
I remember.
Yeah. And you guys remember that?
Yeah.
And it was like a 2 or 3 day deal. And coming out, you know, they used the bigger group to define where do you think the problems are, and then they refined that and they got some research out there. And now they are at the stage of really putting numbers to paper on these different projects. And then figuring out how to fund them. And that's
okay.
Like the Storr Foundation and the Knobloch Foundation in Jackson, they're both interested in helping
dollars.
Fund these projects, you know, partially
Good.
Fund. But, you know, if you can get some private dollars, it helps get state dollars, right? It shows
right.
more interest.
Matching.
So,
very good.
Well, Albert, one concern, I guess, and I don't know the parameters that they use, but I think it's been discussed in the past. If they're looking at it from a standpoint, YDOT's looking at it from a standpoint of how many vehicles down that road versus how many animals are actually killed, there might be some disparity there because it may not have as many much vehicular traffic as, say, the interstate or one of the other highways, but in proportion to that, the number of animals actually killed because of that winter concentration migration is I think is much more significant. So I don't know if that can be brought into a discussion with them either.
So they rate them both at number of hits versus number of animals in the area to prioritize. And so that area has been, it's like top five, I see.
Yeah, and I remember we had that summit. It did kind of come on the radar then.
Yeah.
Because if I remember correctly, there were several people or entities at that summit that didn't realize how much roadkill was along that particular section.
Yeah, and they've actually, I think YDOT had a gal doing research on that section, so a bigger research project, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that this was in progress, but I'd be willing to talk to those Store Foundation and Norplock.
Yeah, I sat down with them and this late summer, and here locally with a guy, I think was with the Wyoming Wildlife Federation, and they're kind of on the funding end of it to talk about it. And I said, well, I've got to have hard numbers before I can go to my compadres and try to make a pitch for it. I know what I'd like to do, but it's impossible. Like a fuel tax to it for a period of time, but that's a pretty tough road to hoe.
Okay. Anything further, Commissioner Rawhauser?
No, I have another subject, but I'll let everybody go and then I'll come back around.
You know, you've got the floor. It's up to you.
Well, I had a constituent come to me. In fact, Mr. Gosar Esquire is here. And he was concerned about the wells down by Big Piney being P&A'd. There's a lot of them that are on the shelf to be closed up. And his concern was, who is responsible to make sure that it's done correctly and they're going deep enough with the cement so whatever happens down below there doesn't get into the water column? And so I wasn't able to answer his question in terms of whose responsibility it is.
It's the Oil and Gas Commission.
It's the Oil and Gas Commission.
And DEQ is involved with it as well. It's funded through what's called a conservation tax. So that's a tax on oil and gas producers. And they pay this tax, and then this money is set aside for like orphaned wells and stuff that's not going to get done, right? It's been abandoned. And so they've been doing a ton of those. Coal bed methane wells that people went bankrupt, you know, it always just keeps creeping up. People go bankrupt, and then DEQ might be letting the contracts on that. The conservation, the Oil and Gas Commission collects the conservation tax, I know, but it's a combination of those two that gets that done. And then they go out with a contract to plug them in.
Bring a chair.
If the company's still in existence, then the company's responsible. But there's, you know, I'll ask on the check. I'll find that out.
Okay.
I know when they hire a contractor, I'm pretty sure that work gets done because they'll check on it.
Now,
if it's an old producer that's plugging in, well, I'm not sure how that's checked. Mm-hmm.
There are certain standards. Does he just need some numbers? Depth? What? What does he need?
May I ask Mr. Gosar?
Yeah.
We're talking about your question about the P&A in these wells.
Yeah.
And, Mr. Doxler, could
you... Do you actually need the numbers that they use? There's certain standards that they adhere to.
No, we have different ownerships on quite a few wells over the Big Piney area. We have both BLM and we have private. So now, does the precedence of BLM lands being plugged up in, or does
Oil
and Gas Conservation...
Who gets it first? Let's find out. Yeah.
Now, a lot of those wells have pipe in them, and my only concern is how do you protect the freshwater sands that go down to 1,000 feet with pipe in the hole? Do you let the mud that had been in there, when you only have a surface pipe of 150 feet down to wells that are been drilled many years ago, down to 75, 8,000, 8,500 feet. Now, how do you protect that 100 or 1,000 feet when you only have 150 feet of surface pipe, and then you have your production pipe that is only tracked in above 400 feet above the productive intervals?
They'll do some research.
Good
on
question.
That. Yeah, it is. They'll do some research on that, Tony, and they'll get back with us and let us know.
They'll get back to me, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. BLM and private ownership, federal government controls one. The private ownership, then that's the ends up being on company. The states. It ends up being, if there's nobody left, right, if everybody's went bankrupt,
gotcha,
and nobody's left, then it's up to the state of Wyoming ends up plugging that.
Gotcha.
But if it's on BLM land, it's a BLM deal.
BLM problem?
Okay.
All private? Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good.
Private, it's state of Wyoming.
Okay, state of Wyoming. All right.
Thank you. Go ahead.
On the same subject, is that bonding following these companies better than it used to be?
Look. In the future.
Well, hold on, Tony. I need to recognize you, okay? So let's go ahead and finish your question.
The question was...
Yes, it does. It's better than it was. It's not perfect, but it's... The last... I haven't been on minerals for 2 years, but we were getting regular updates, and it was... The bonding process was getting better.
Okay.
And more thorough.
Thank you.
Thank
go
you.
Ahead, Mr. Gosar.
Now, we have a different scenario today. We're drilling... in the Pine, the Atlantic Pine, a lot of laterals. That's not only in here, but it's all in Texas, all the west, and in the east. And you're going out there 10,000 feet laterally from whatever. Well, Exxon went under the Bering Sea 50,000 feet. That's 10 miles. Whether they completed, we don't have any information on that. Okay. Now, how are you going to plug that schematic? When you get such a productive amount of gas in 10,000 feet out here in the Pinedale Anticline, how do you go ahead and plug and abandon that to protect that 1,000 feet? Do you say, I must set 1,000 feet of pipe in order to protect that freshwater zone? And you can define it on the logs if you go ahead and log it accordingly. My question is, it's not only trying to be what happened in the past, but to be proactive in the future.
You bet. That's probably.
I don't think that's been addressed.
And that's probably.
Plus the fact that we're now coming into a different type of world of states' rights versus international rights.
Yeah. And those are probably questions that need to be addressed with the Oil and Gas Commission, the Petroleum Association of Wyoming. There's a lot of different players in here, and our representatives are going to do a little bird dogging on that for us, and then they're going to get back to us on that. So we need to move along with our questions. Commissioner Noble?
I guess enlighten me. There's conversation about the BOCES program and recapturing some of that money. What am I on the right track, or how's that enlightening?
I have not heard of anybody raiding BOCES. I've heard of some discussions in education on whether BOCES could be like the so there's the residential BOCES, and then there is our BOCES office, right? The residential BOCES is the kid, those hard to place kids that are really tough that they put in Jackson. And so there's some discussion about whether BOCES could serve to do some shared services among districts for particularly special ed type students. Okay, so I've heard that discussion. And then there has been a discussion, but nobody's brought, I've seen a bill, but I don't think anybody's gonna bring it, of whether those BOCES boards should be completely controlled by districts. You know, in other words, districts put all the people on those BOCES boards, or whether it should be a combination of community members and school board members. So I've heard that discussion. But I haven't heard of any raid on the BOCES program.
Okay.
Commissioner, yes. when you say recapture, what do you mean?
Well, that was just some scuttle that I picked up on the street. I can't speak in specifics on that. It was just
okay.
There were some people concerned that there was a bill going out to redistribute maybe the BOCES monies differently.
There could be, but I haven't seen. See, there was an attempt on the rec mill. Remember that? It's mm-hmm. not the same, but it's a similar issue.
So
and that bill was killed in 2 years ago. But what that was is obviously these counties that have more money, mm-hmm. you get more rec mill. And these counties that wanted our rec mill. And fortunately we got that killed in committee, but I have not heard of a similar one on BOCES, but that doesn't mean
I think it's exactly the same thing. It's recapturing, taking from the rich and giving to the poor.
Yeah. And you've heard about it too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't heard about it.
So
now the residential BOCES thing, that deal's all screwed up in my opinion, and it needs it looked at in an interim. Not that they're not doing great things, but you look at it and like the Big Pineys and the Pinedales, mm-hmm. they'll pay their share of that residential BOCES thing, and there's other counties won't pay any, other districts won't pay anything. Mm-hmm. And then they say, well, we offset it by paying a little more for a student to go into that program, and it doesn't offset it. I think Big Pine is the same way. They've been funding a lot of that.
Big Pine has funded 0.2 mil since the beginning of time, so to speak.
Yeah.
Pine Deal is now. They didn't used to. I don't believe Star Valley does at all. Never has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's that whole deal should be. Up to a half mil, mm-hmm. and all around the state we have these kids, and we end up sending some of them clear out of state. And I think it ought to be a mandatory half mil, and we ought to get a statewide board to make sure that all of these residential placement places are functioning correctly and doing the right thing. And because they kind of. There's different ones in different places, and they kind of have different missions in different places. You guys know more about this than me. But it's not well coordinated, and it's not funded right. It's just my
well, opinion. They get no state funding for the BOCES. It's all local.
It is.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The residential BOCES will get Medicaid dollars, and they
they get Medicaid.
State Medicaid dollars.
I'm sorry.
Yep.
Thank you. Anything further? Commissioner Burnett?
I guess a concern I have, and I think, Albert, you and I have talked about it. I'm not sure if we have, Fred, but a couple of years ago, the Joint Labor Committee passed a bill that went into law effective July 1st that had to do with freestanding emergency departments. And it was my understanding at that time, number one, the state of Wyoming does not have one. But there was a clause or a termination in there that goes into effect June 30th, 2019 that has to do with licensings of said facilities. I guess in our situation in Sublette County now, in terms of not knowing which direction healthcare is going, whether they're going to pursue with the critical access hospital or maybe reinvestigate the idea of a freestanding emergency department. I was just hoping or seeing if there's any possibility that there could be some discussion to extend that deadline out a couple of years. Because I know that as we talked, the Department of Health was promulgating some rules that were going to be passed and go into effect by July 1st next year.
So we got a bill that's 3 years.
You do have one.
And Eric's gonna run it, so he'll probably be looking for you.
Yeah, and it's an individual bill. It's not coming from the joint, but there is one coming up to extend that.
Yep.
Good.
So we got that, I think, covered.
Okay, and then the other thing I have is really not for you gentlemen because it comes from a federal level, but if in the course of your conversations or you might be able to give us some advice, I think we, meaning the county, probably need to have a conversation with our representative senators on a national level to look at the issue that the regulations prohibit mid-level practitioners from doing admissions to skilled nursing facilities. And in Wyoming, in particular in Sumner County, that has a significant impact because you have to have a physician there for the admission, to do the admission orders. And in our county in particular, with the way it's structured, oftentimes we don't have a medical provider on for the weekend. It is the mid-level. Of course, there's a lot of transfers that would take place on the weekend from St. John's or wherever. And everybody's put in a dilemma because we can't accept them, we can't write orders. We have a significant pool of talent that can help with our physician shortage if they were allowed not only to do admissions, but there is a provision in the law that allows mid-level to see a physician's patient at a skilled nursing facility every other visit on a rotational basis, but they are not allowed to go in the capacity of a physician, write admissions orders, do admissions, do call, and that kind of thing. So I think that's something we've just recently discussed. We want to maybe talk with our senators about, but in the course of your conversations, if you have any ability or whatever to back that up, would be appreciated. And I'm sure, Fred, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it extends beyond that. It extends to hospice.
Yeah.
And it's all coming from, and I've had a conversation with Senator Barrasso about that very thing. And we pursued a state bill to do that last year, and there's nothing we can do with it.
But
it's something that they're working on.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, and they're slow.
Is there anything we can do in terms of letting our feelings or requests be known or phone calls or whatever?
I would write a letter to our congressional delegation and say, here's what we're facing in rural Wyoming, and you know, this, we'd like to see it fixed. Because I know it's on Barrasso's mind, and I know it's on Enzi's mind both. I've talked with them both about it.
I would include all three of them, but I'd also reference Fred's conversation with Senator Barrasso. That kind of helps him remember, now I remember that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything further?
That's it. Thank you.
Commissioner Bowser. Three that come to mind. One is maintaining the NERPA funding for counties. I think you may see a request from the upcoming governor to maintain that or possibly enhance it. There was some discussion during the committee to increase that funding and possibly even require counties to have natural resource plans in their dealings with the federal government, sort of like they do in the state of Utah. I don't know where the legislature might be on that.
Critical. What you know what the governor did.
He
released it this morning. He says, I recommend an increase of $1.5 million in the FNRPA, specifically for the purpose of creating a sub-account that assists counties in the creation of county natural resource plans. The law requires federal land management agencies to collaborate.
His full budget
expected it would be at his request. I didn't know
How do you feel about that natural resource plan, Joel?
We have a lot of counties have them. We do.
Okay.
It needs updated, but the BLM and Forest Service now are increasingly paying attention to that, and based on, at least during this administration, they're both being told to work closer with local governments. But if you don't have a natural resource plan that kind of lays out your philosophy, they don't always know what the expectation is. So it's critical.
Okay.
In that line. Question on the livestock board. Do you know, Albert, if they filled that state investigator position?
It was vacant on the last sheet I looked at, but I heard they just filled it. And they hired, do you remember Chris Strang?
Barely, yeah.
You know, he was did the federal vet thing or state vet thing. He was one of those first state vet guys that came out and did the brucellosis.
Yeah.
Well, he must have got his law enforcement degree because it's my understanding they hired him.
Okay.
And then, Ag committee, and I don't know how they're bringing this, because I don't think they have any meetings left, but Hicks has been working on a bill to try to get funding to sheriffs, you know, for training and other issues. The problem with these bill is there are no sideboards on the spend. And I told him that. I said, that's going to be a tough swallow in appropriations when you have no sideboards on how, you know, local counties can spend that money. And then I said, but if you can get a little bit of match from producers, so if there's a little bit of local match in there, you know, not local match, but, you know, brand inspection fee dollars in there, I think that will, you know, that would be a better way of persuading, you know, because then if the livestock board's got their own skin in the game, they're more likely, and by rule and regulation, to be, I think, to look at how that money's spent.
Well, it does appear that at least most counties, if they had some financial help to get the training and the sort of things that need to happen, they could do more. But just to stop the investigator positions and just blow it off on the counties that don't have the expertise, and some counties that don't have the financial ability to train their law enforcement to do the kind of job they need to do for livestock theft investigation is a problem that needs looked at. The other thing, have you heard anything on where the legislature might be on local government funding compared to prior years?
Well, not the legislature. I can tell you what the governor recommended.
Probably the same as last year.
No, I reckon, you know, so this is a supplemental budget, right?
Yeah.
So this will be in addition to what was already budgeted. And it says, I recommend $5 million in direct distribution to cities, towns, and counties, and he recommends an additional $20 million in consensus grants.
Okay. I hadn't heard any of that.
So that just came out this morning. Oh, that's the that and the FINERPA is really his supplemental requests under local government. Now, he'll have some governor letters later, and whether he has another priority that's kind of local government related in those, I'm not sure. I've heard of that.
So how does the process work with the governor-elect? We have a new governor in January, right? So
right, but it's submitted now to the legislature as of this morning.
And that's the official request for...
Now, theoretically, I think, from what I've heard, and Dan knows more about this than me, that come January, it's possible Gordon could have another letter from the governor, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Submit them pretty late.
Sure.
So I would think that if he had a high priority that was not in all of this, then he might
have a chance to
put his own letter out.
He can change. Outgoing governor gives us this to look at in December, but Governor Gordon can change things around.
Well, you assume that.
He'll be the new sheriff in town.
Yeah. I think that's all I had, Andy. Might think of something else as we go along.
Couple of things. First of all, this will be my last opportunity to meet with you gentlemen. So, thank you.
Sure.
Appreciate all your help and your willingness to come and meet with us and sit down and talk. It's always great when your legislators say, you know, talk to me before I go. So, thank you. Appreciate that. We've got a 100-year-old statute that is still dictating our information dissemination. I know we've been down this road, but we need to continue down this road. We need to be able to figure out ways. Electronic information dissemination is easy, it's fast, it's efficient, it is cheap. So we need to continue down that road and appreciate all the efforts you've done up to now to help us with that. But if you would please continue down that road. Second thing that I have is got an email on a House bill that talks about
public records requests and such. So that's going through now through the Joint Corporations Elections and Political Subdivision Interim Committee. And the thing that has our small districts worried is the penalties that are still in that bill. We're talking felony stuff here. And if you've got a small district that this just kind of slips by, and if they don't understand and they don't get it, they're faced with felony charges. So it's something to really see, delve into and see if you can work on fine-tuning that bill as it comes through the House.
I've got a related question, because, you know, we had that bill a few years ago that kind of tried to hold special districts to a little higher standard than before.
Yeah.
And I got a letter from a guy from in a fire district that said the cost of the audit was more than they were paying for about anything else in their budget. You know?
Right.
And have you heard a lot of that from different special districts?
Well, we've heard it from several different special districts that, you know, these small districts are lay people running these things, you know. So, it will be a serious tax on their reserves, but also I think what they're mostly worried about is, man, I don't want to be involved in that, so I'm going to get the heck out of this special district, so I'm not at risk.
Right.
So, I don't know if there's
penalties.
Yeah, things that you can do and work on.
If you hear more about the auditing charges, you know, or Mary or whoever.
Go
so
ahead.
It used to be that their audit requirements were pretty
capped.
Were capped, and they had levels of funds that they'd received determined what kind of audit they had to have, and some of them were just simply get somebody to look at your books, and then sometimes it was a little more formal than that, so it wasn't very expensive. But I think that they did require them to start having more formal audits, primarily because these districts have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that was part of that whole special district legislation. And part of that also was to get the records public. Because we have quite a variety of special districts. The organized guys, like the Weed and Pest District and the Conservation District, who have staff and who have boards and that kind of thing. But they're the ones that are panicking right now, but I'm sure they don't get public records requests like we do. I mean, that bill applies to the county as well. We do public records requests all the time. We know what the timetables are and that type of thing, and know that there's hell to pay if you don't get your records out.
And we have the staff to deal with it.
But we have the staff to deal with it, but some of those, I mean, one of my public records requests was a couple years ago. I had somebody request all of the ballots from the primary election because they didn't believe that their candidate didn't win, you know. And so that was a whole day, two staff people running copies kind of deal. Anyway, but I think, and the other part of it is some of these guys haven't ever heard of transparency, that they're supposed to be providing that information to folks. Anyway, so then that's when you get a public records request, is because, you're not telling me what you're doing, so you're going to, you know, we're going to pull a records request on you and make you produce it. Some of it's harassment. But I think that doesn't scare me, that fine. It's like, I'm supposed to do that. We're supposed to provide that information. And whatever, but I think these little districts, they're freaking out because they've never done it before.
And they're supposed to appoint a specific person as that.
Yeah, and I don't know what that is, because in the statute, I'm the records keeper for the county, but for a district, wouldn't you think it would be the clerk of that district? I mean, they have officers in their district, their secretary of treasurer or something.
It says requiring the designation of a public records person for each agency.
You know, and they already have a requirement now that if they don't have a full-time office, they're supposed to supposed to file their stuff in our office. So I have files for some of these little districts. Some of them have full-time offices. I could see it being onerous on a little district, on a mosquito district,
on the little
or a mosquito abatement district.
Yeah, I've been hearing from cemetery districts.
You know, cemetery districts.
Yeah, and cemetery districts are small. They're a little more organized than some of the
sometimes
the others, but yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's
and I remember on the audit, this is back to the audit deal, which is in my brain, is if it was under a million, you didn't have to have the audit thing, whatever, the some kind of audit. And now that other bill, like a year or so ago, removed that cap. And so then anybody's kind of subject to these audits. And they were talking about, like, they spent $80,000 on a truck and they were going to spend $20,000 on an audit or something. And so,
well, and that's another
after they already have to hire a CPA because right. they can't afford anybody else.
Yeah, because they were required, you know, once you hit that one threshold, it was a CPA audit.
Yeah.
Some of those were just a bookkeeper look, you know, a review or whatever. And I know some of the little districts, when they first started that out, I had a couple people say to me, would you come look at our books? Well, you know, I don't know how to audit or any of that stuff, but, you know, the bank statements look good to me and the checkbook was valid. You know, it's just that kind of thing. And but you're talking tax dollars, even yeah. if it's little money as compared to big money.
Yeah.
And, but yeah.
Okay. That's all I have.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask yes. a question? We have many special districts. We have a county auditor that comes and does the county's books.
No. We hire a CPA accountant
okay.
to do
a firm to come
the
in.
12, yeah, to do the 12 mil budget mm-hmm. audit, which we're required to do. We have to do an annual audit. And then these other districts have requirements that they have to, they're bringing in CPAs.
Okay,
also.
So somebody, yeah. they're all different people coming in.
Yeah.
Would it streamline it if it was the same group?
Well, we've talked about that before, but there's resistance from elected boards in little districts from having the same auditor. You know?
Hmm. Can you imagine that?
I've been doing pretty well today, so I'm just gonna stay right here. I'm doing just fine.
Very good. Go ahead.
Just wondered if you guys know of anything coming up on proposed legislation that we ought to know about, and probably don't because we don't pay near as much attention to what's
good
going on.
We understand you got to get a new. Two man over in Cheyenne.
Yeah, we're working on that.
Was he going to try to do both jobs for a while, or what's he going to do?
Maybe till for a while. For a while.
Not long.
Yeah,
not
very long. See I can.
Yeah. So our executive committee, they're working pretty hard on that one.
Okay.
So we'll learn more about it next week. We have a winter meeting.
So the bills and Jim's now on revenue. God bless you. but just so everybody kind of knows, so I called the LSO today and got a rundown of all the tax bills that passed Revenue Committee, just so we know what may be coming, right? That doesn't mean they'll be introduced, but that at least got through committee. And so they got one was a compact with tribes on the tobacco tax to try to see what tobacco tax can be collected on the reservation. 5% lodging tax, and if I screw up, you correct me. 5% lodging tax, 3 of that would be statewide, which would be used to pull the tourism board, Wyoming Tourism Board, kind of off the general fund, and then 2% would be local, and then it gets confusing because 2% comes back to the locals. And if you already have a countywide lodging tax, it's pretty simple. Then that 2% replaces 2 of the, well, how many percent you have, 2 to 4, right? I think you could have. If it's a town, then a portion of it comes back to replace what the town is, and then the county would end up with their own pot of money for tourism. Okay? Mm-hmm. So in your case, if this were to pass, and Pinedale maintained theirs, you know, they would get their 2% without having to go to the voter. Then the additional 2 they would have to. So this is a guaranteed 2, and you would get a guaranteed 2 to do with as you chose, however that's mandated in statute. And then the next one that would affect you all is a half cent increase in sales tax. The first $50 million a year would follow the Madden formula. So it'd still be split, okay? So it would be a half cent sales tax. The local government split would still go to locals. the state piece of that would be the first $50 million a year would go to the Madden formula back to locals, and then anything over that $50 million a year would spill to the general fund. So they're projecting $60 million a year in sales tax on this half cent. That's kind of what I gathered today. And so there'd be like maybe $10 million would spill over to the general fund. All of the rest of that half cent in one way or another would go back to locals, either through the Madden formula or through their distribution that happens today. Does that make sense?
Kind of.
Yeah. The best I can explain it better if you need me to. No, that's and then the other sales tax is this lower and broaden idea, which, you know, so you have to reconcile all these different bills in the end if any of them were to pass. But this one would lower the sales tax by a half a percent, but would broaden it to include services and get rid of some of the three big exemptions, which are food,
agriculture.
No, food, manufacturing, and data centers. Hmm. Well, there's no exemption on ag. We just get a break, you know, tax-wise. And so not, I haven't heard anything about the exemption on farm machinery.
That's what I was thinking
of. That's not one of the big three. And then the services wouldn't include lawyers, which I think if you're going to go after anything, you'd go after that. But it wouldn't include health services and bankers, banking, health services, lawyers, and another one I can't think of. And so that's that bill. Then there's a $9 million for education phased in over 3 years, all properties but minerals. All properties but minerals. So that would be industrial, commercial, ag, residential, all would pick up $9 million to schools.
I didn't know this one. Summarize that one for me again.
$9 million phased in over a 3 year period, $3 million a year. That's my that's my recollection of what I heard. Is that true, Jim?
This is the education funding. You're talking about the $3 million a year, that's for education.
Yes, this will be for education.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay.
Earmarked specifically.
Yeah,
for
education. I'm with you on that one. I know that one.
But it would be for all properties but minerals. So it would be a property tax on all the properties, but not mineral taxes. Mm-hmm. That's the way I understood it. And then the other one, the other big one is index the fuel tax to the National Consumer Price Index. And it would be calculated every 2 years. So the first year there would be any increase in the fuel tax would be 2020. And then it would be based upon an inflationary index, which could be, it's always up, but theoretically it could be down.
Okay. So, okay. Go ahead.
I have a question. I don't know if you can, maybe I'm just confused and I can't get that cleared up.
Always that.
Yeah, with what you just said about the $9 million tax for education, how does that impact the state formula now and how monies are dispersed? Because counties like Sublette have been for many years now, decades, been sending money back to the state. Is this money going to go into education? Is it going into a general fund? How is that split up? Are we increasing taxes that we're going to turn around and give back to the state?
Now, this is all tax, state tax. So we right now is a 12 mil, right? 12 mil state tax for education.
Right.
And so this would go from 12 mil, and then this would be a separate one because it would be differently, different categories, but that would be a...
But in terms of helping our district, it's not really going to help our district. It's just going to help
state fund. It will help your district from potentially getting cut more at the state level.
Through the foundation program.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a. You guys got to talk to these guys on my right here about this Senate's
I'm just trying to help swallow this pill because we've been cut to the bone, and in some cases probably had some amputations in terms of school district number 9, and yet we're going to be faced with having increased taxes that we probably won't proportionately share the benefits or the outcome from this money.
Is 9 still sending money back?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think I heard the other night, $200 million.
Yep.
So they lost another 30 students.
Yeah, we've been hit hard because of that and the decline in enrollment.
The decline in enrollment has hit you harder
really
than
hard.
Anything. And
yes.
It's been like...
But I guess what I'm saying, if we're going to get more taxes, I guess I'm playing the devil's advocate and saying, what are we going to get for our taxes? We'll just keep feeding the kitty for the state. We're hurting now.
If you wouldn't be hurting as bad as if we cut education to the point... If we cut education down to the amount that we have for shortfall, Big Piney School might not even exist.
I understand, and that's the travesty of it, because if you look at over the years the money that we put into the Department of Education, had we not had to send those funds in, we'd be in a much better position than we are now. We're starving ourselves out because we're giving all the food away.
Yeah. And that's not going to... I told those guys down there the other night, that bus has left the barn. The quality of funding in the state of Wyoming is... Education funding is not going to change.
And the sad part is we may be the poster child for the double whammy, giving the money back through recapture, but also losing students.
Triple whammy.
Yeah.
And then increasing our taxes.
And it, yeah.
Well, the third one is we did cut education some.
Yeah.
And so one thing will be, you know, that the legislature is going to be looking at this year is JEC, they passed a recommendation onto the governor for an ECA. JAC, we forwarded that as a recommendation to the governor, and the governor will have that in his budget. So that should help alleviate some of the cuts that we did in the last few years if it passes. But the money that is generated in these districts, you know, and I'm not going to pick on the Senate too hard here, but I'll pick on them a little bit. There were a couple of constitutional amendments that were out and about last year about, should the Supreme Court be allowed to look at education funding in a certain light and then asking for local mills, you know, and then but equalizing it as well. And, you know, if we're going to scrap the Constitution on education, then just give my districts back their money and we'll do just fine. But... It's because of the Craig report, that deficit that was like this big on education has shrunk down to like this big, but that Craig report could change overnight, right? Oil is the most volatile source of revenue.
Right now, natural gas is higher than it's been for a long time.
It's going up.
But who knows how long that'll last.
Yeah, that's going to kind of balance things out a little bit, but... If you look at the long term, and Dan, correct me, you probably read this as well. So us in appropriations, we've got a projection out to 2024, and if we don't inflate agencies more than 2%, and we didn't provide an ECA, and we kind of held our line on our budgets, we would be pretty good on the general fund side out to 2024. And we would only be sucking out of the LISR about 300 and some million on the education side, which sounds like a lot, but we were at 300 to 400 million a year shortfall.
And 450.
3 to 4, depending on how you looked at it. And so we've narrowed that substantially, but we still have to fix it, or we're going to have this battle every year. And I would rather find some way to increase revenue to support education than I would cut education anymore. That's just Albert. I've made that pretty clear.
Can I ask this? Aside from having to return that money, put that over there for just a moment, how do you feel about the increase of 3 mills every year?
That's increasing the property tax mill levy from 12 mills to 21 mills.
Yeah, so how do you... Aside from that issue that still needs to be addressed, if you're giving money back. We should have created a permanent mental trust for your school districts. You can remember when we did that with Subbo? We were trying to set you up with it. That goes back about six, 7 years.
We never got that done either.
So I think
there'll be resistance from taxpayers.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to exempt minerals. That's going to, people are going to say.
I know you can't speak for everybody over here, but how would they feel about three increase?
I think the people in District Number 9 are going to have a great deal of angst over it.
I think counties are already taxing as high as they can, and they want us to cut down.
The education model is based on number of students. And so whether you increase the taxes or you don't take, you continue to take away our recapture money, if we continue to lose students, we're going to continue to lose funding.
Yeah, you got that.
There won't be anybody left in Big Piney to teach. We, in our school district, we do not have a non-tenured teacher. They're all gone. We only have teacher's aides in special education. There are none anyplace else. They've cut, I mean, it's just frightening. And I taught there for 34 years. So I was there during the heyday. And we have all of those teacherages and everything there for to offer to our teachers, but they, so they have a place to live when they come there as new teachers. Every one of them are empty. It's just a ghost town.
And that's
and I don't know what you do.
And that's still on the table to have the teacherage as part of their benefits package.
Oh, absolutely, yes. To draw there. Yeah. But if you can't hire a teacher because you don't have any money, then it's a catch 22.
Yeah. And you know the thing is District 9 is getting to the point whether it's going to be iffy whether they can supply the Hathaway Success Group.
Oh, absolutely, mm-hmm. And being a vocational teacher, as I was, I believe it's the backbone of education, because in this country, if you can weld or you can be a carpenter or a plumber or whatever, an electrician, you can make a good living and not have to go to college. But if you're going to work on the success curriculum through the University of Wyoming, we don't have time, we don't have the teachers or the money to have a vocational curriculum. So,
and VOTEC has kind of resurfaced in the education conversation.
Yes, it has,
recently.
And it should have never left.
I agree.
But anyway, that's.
I think that career tech, there's going to be a bill to kind of bring.
Yes.
And I am working. It's a struggle, but I am working on a bill to try to figure out how, and of course, I've added more money to the debt on the education side, but. How do these districts like Kimmer and Big Piney, you don't get a small district bump, you don't get a small school bump, you're at the bottom end of the trough, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at that whole funding model and seeing how I can add some teachers in and see what those costs are and make a run at it. But I'll try. How's that?
Well, I understand. We can, yeah, and that's all someone can ask.
Yeah.
My concern is that being a recapture school and sending all that money away and losing money over here solely because of, they're not taking it away, it's just because of the formula. You would think there would be an exception for a school like Big Piney, say, oh, okay, you guys have dumped $200 million into this system. We'll give you a loan to try to build back up your curriculum. Where is somebody like Niobrara County that doesn't have a tax base, so they've never put any money in because they've never needed to because of schools like Pine, the schools here in Suffolk County. So, Mr. Chairman,
thank you.
I call for the question.
Thank you so much. Gentlemen, I'm going to end our discussion then. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it.
Really, thank you for the time.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We'll see you in Cheyenne.
Yeah, see you in Cheyenne. Yeah. I'm all the
thing. I'm going to work on that, but you're not going to get the recap.
No, I know. But it just makes me feel better, Howard.
I know. I hear it.
We deal with that a lot. Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How are you?
Hey, you good luck. Thank you very much. See you, Jim.
See you, Joel.
Yeah.
I've been signed a few of those cultivators on that.
Dan, thank you.
Janice, come on up. Have your request.
I can be fast.
Good.
Get you back caught up.
Fast is good.
Catch us up.
All right. So you got it all on your agenda.
Yeah, there it is. All we got to do is say yes.
January 30th. From 9 to noon, the people with pictometry, the aerial photography that we contracted, will be coming to Sublette County to train us on how to use that product.
Gotcha.
I would like to invite all of you to that training as well.
I will be there, thank you.
And we'll invite, you know, other entities like Sheriff's Office, EMS, whoever wants to come to come. January 30th, it'll be at the BOCES building in their computer lab. And I will send out an invitation. But anyway, I would like all my staff to be able to go to that training all at once.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if I can close the doors.
Yeah, I think as long as you give enough advance warning for everybody, they can work around that. I don't see any problems with that.
Probably need to put a notice in media to let everybody know that you're going to be closed.
Yeah, put a sign up.
Okay.
At the first of the year, so that everybody knows that one day between 9 and noon, of course, you'll have somebody walking. But
yes, we will. Yeah. But
they won't be calling Andrew.
Yeah,
no,
they won't.
They'll be calling the new chairman, so that'll be good.
You have donuts?
We can get donuts, but we can't have them in the computer lab. So.
Yes, we're
looking for the hole.
Yes,
all right.
Yeah. Sounds good.
That's it?
That's it.
All right.
Done. Janice, thank you.
Thanks,
you.
Janice.
You bet.
All right. We're ready for the Environmental Services public hearing. Mary, when it comes to public hearings.
Dun, 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 dun.
Huh? Yep. Turn it over to you.
I'm going to give you these applications so you have them for reference. Mr. Chairman, I noticed the public on the 21st of November that we would be having a hearing today to consider a resolution of support for this application. You heard from these folks on the 20th of November in Big Piney, so you have a pretty good overview of what their program is. Commissioner, or Chairman Nelson and I met yesterday morning with Elena Zempel concerning some of the documents that we'll be involved with. There's a development agreement. There is a lease agreement for the property. And revenue recapture plan, which
thank you.
Do you know anything about our new revenue recapture plan, like within since last night?
I know some stuff. I figure we can talk about it.
I guess you're up.
Okay.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Go ahead, Kate, if you've got some new information for us.
Sure. I guess, again, I'm Kate Dahl. I'm the contracted grant writer for this application. This is Jeff Keogh, the president of Environmental Services.
Hello,
and Sam Summerall, the director of sales and marketing for Environmental Services. I guess first, what I can do is just go over a general summary of the application, and then we can open it up to questions, to concerns, and whatever questions you guys have. That sounds good. So as you know, Environmental Services is a family established corporation that's based in Oceanside, California. They develop mobile water treatment systems for the U.S. Department of Defense. They have locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico. They currently employ over 60 people. And in 2017, they moved their manufacturing division here to Pinedale, Wyoming. Since 2018, they've already hired 9 people, and basically all of their products are going to be manufactured here. So that includes wash racks, off-grid rain harvest systems, water treatment trucks, filter presses, off-grid solar systems, well treatment, potable water treatment systems. Those are all now manufactured here in Pinedale. They have been growing exponentially for the last couple decades, and they have contracts lined up for the next 5 years. They have recently won all the contracts for the U.S. Marine Reserve facilities for the next 18 months, and they've also been awarded a bid by the U.S. Army for 22 full-scale potable water systems for Puerto Rico. They plan to continue to grow, and their goals for the next 3 years include to increase their market share of U.S. Army Reserve facility maintenance contracts by 30%, as well as successfully bid 40 additional contracts with the Marine Force Reserve, as well as double their wash rack division. Just to reiterate, what they're requesting today is a partnership with USELA County to request from the Wyoming Business Council just under $1.1 million in order to purchase the facility here that they currently lease from EHI. Sublette County would lease the building back to ESI with the option of ESI purchasing it from you at the end of the 5-year period. Basically what this would do, the ESI's current facility is a little bit too small for them to fulfill these orders. They don't have enough indoor space, so basically they need to invest in a new shop building there, as well as some outdoor space to fulfill these contracts. Besides building that new space, they would need to hire a total of 21 employees over the next 5-year period. These are living wage jobs in the construction and technical industries that translate directly from the gas field jobs that are here now dwindling. So I guess then to look at it, the grant application, besides the $1.1 million, typically in these grant applications, the community government ponies up the match for it. ESI is putting up the entire match, and they're overmatched. Typically, the business council requires 10%. They've provided a match of 15%, which includes their lease payments that they would pay up until April, when this application would be approved and the property would transfer, their investment in the concrete on site, equipment rentals, and the new metal building. Basically, this application is a win-win. It meets a lot of the business council's standards that they lay out in the application. For Sublette County, this would really allow 3 things for you. Number one, this county has contributed a significant amount of money to the state budget over the years. Very little of that has been recaptured in grant dollars, so this would allow Sublette County to recapture some of that revenue you sent off to come back to the county where it originated. It would also show a win-win, show some tangible economic development results to the public for all the existing efforts that have happened up to this point. And third, you would also retain 75% of the lease payments over the 5-year period in an earmarked economic development fund, half of which could be used for staff. At the current lease price that's in the revenue recapture agreement, that would be about $75,000 a year.
Yep. Very good. Also, ESI is responsible for the property taxes.
Yes, ESI would be a triple net lease, so they would maintain the building, take care of all the snowplow maintenance, all of that. All Sublette County would do is hold the building, take the lease payments, and do the grant management back to the Wyoming Business Council.
So kind of an oversimplification of what the county's role is in this agreement is the county will support the grant application as the governmental agency, and then the county will act as the fiduciary agent. So the county would then make the purchase of the building, where the county would then be reimbursed by SLIB for that for the purchase price. So there's, then we're at zero there. Then the lease payments that come in, the county keeps 75% of that lease payment, and the 25% goes to the state, or does it go to the board?
Goes to the
business council. Goes to the business council. So it's an original outlay of funds with a reimbursement of those funds, and then 75% of what comes back in the county retains for the economic development. That's kind of an oversimplification of the agreement. Questions, gentlemen? Go ahead.
What is the distance or time frame from the time we write a check for the building and we get the money?
Okay, so they're going to have their hearing in April,
mm-hmm.
and they will know after that, probably the 1st of May, I believe, is about what she said. There's a little bit of time there to do the agreements and that type of thing. What would happen is the county would purchase the building, and we would have a short term there before we would get reimbursed by the business council for the money that we spent to buy the building. So, a few months. And we were talking yesterday when we talked to Elena about that, because we were planning budget-wise, are we going to, you know, is that going to come?
This budget?
This budget, next budget, how is that going to work? But it will be a few months of our money being expended, I would think, at the very most. It's not going to be years. They're going to give us the money. We're going to spend $1 million, they're going to give us $1 million.
Right.
And then we collect the lease payments. And we keep 75%
of that. And we distribute the 25% back to the
county. 25%. And that 25% gets paid back, I don't know if it's quarterly. We talked about quarterly and annually.
And
I think it's, yeah, and I don't know what.
We're not
we'll
sure.
Figure that out, I think. But that's not a big deal.
Okay. Yeah.
The other thing also that we're going to be required for the reporting on this grant and that type of thing, but there's only one expenditure that will get made, and that will be to buy the building up front, as opposed to similar grant applications that we had with the business council when we did the school remodels, when we did the Daniel School, the Boulder School. We were paying construction bills every month and then making quarterly reports. This is going to be easy peasy. It's one check. We'll do some reporting, but the reporting will be easy as well, because
one-time report.
All we're doing is collecting money and sending a check to Cheyenne. So the fiduciary part is going to be really simple, and it works exactly like we did with the schools. We hold the property for 5 years, then we deed it back to the ESI.
So today's order of business would be to have a motion to support the grant application.
And this is a public hearing.
Right.
For that.
Right. Okay. Any comment from the public?
On this? I'm Leah Radakovich. I'm with the Main Street and Pinedale program. This is my vice chair, Monty Bolgiano. This is something that Kate brought to our attention last week at our board meeting. Main Street Pinedale supports economic development, and so this kind of aligns with our vision. So this is something that we'd like to verbally stand behind and support. We are discussing this board to write a letter of recommendation for ESI for this.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Anybody else have any comment from the public? Go ahead.
And I'm Jennifer Zook, I'm representing the chamber, and we have written a letter of support for this. We're very much behind this for economic development as well.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Gentlemen, discussion, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, we've talked about it. It isn't like we haven't talked about it.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a great opportunity, and I would like to make the motion that Sublette County support the Business Ready grant and loan application for Enviromedial Services, Inc., to go forward with their grant application.
Second. It has been moved and seconded that we adopt a resolution authorizing submission of the application to the Wyoming Business Council under the Business Ready Community Grant and Loan Program for a business committed project on behalf of the governing body of the county of Sublette. Any further discussion?
Just a comment. I think certainly understand the fiduciary outline and responsibility. Certainly agree that it's a worthy project moving forward. And I think also with the way this thing is structured, it's almost like the gift that keeps on giving, because we'll be able to take opportunity from those monies that we receive in terms of those lease payments.
Start the next program.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's a good deal.
Yeah. Any further discussion, gentlemen? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Okay.
Thank you all very much.
I'll sign the resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Good luck moving forward.
Yeah.
The building goes up in 10 days, so we will, sir. Pray for a warm spell.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to get it.
You better not bet on that.
We prayed for you.
Looking forward to it.
Good luck going forward, man.
I need to talk to you about something else. Okay. Later on, I'll get in touch with you.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
We'll make you guys proud.
Good luck.
Yep. Good luck, Chairman.
Thank you,
sir.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you. Look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much.
You back. Hope you get your donuts.
If I'd known that about donuts.
That's all right.
You go ahead and take a brief break.
Okay. Just after we were gaining all this time.
What's that?
After we were gaining all this time.
I know it. We really should forge right there. Only a 5-minute break.
Me and Elena tried to get as good as possible. We're trying to get out of the house.
I started on.
Anyway, but yeah, no, it's good.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Yeah.